Hey, and welcome back to the A24 podcast. Today's guests became best friends in 2007 while traveling the world together on the marathon press tour for Superbad. In the 12 years since, Jonah Hill and Michael Cera have stayed close as their careers continue to expand in new directions. This past year, Jonah made his incredible filmmaking debut with Mid-90s, while Michael Cera has further established himself as a formidable Broadway actor, earning raves for his performance in Kenneth Lonergan's play, The Waverly Gallery. Despite their busy schedules, we help them find an hour to sit down and finally catch up.
We're starting right now. I'm Jonah Hill.
I'm Michael Cera.
This is Michael Cera, and we've been friends for almost 12 years, maybe even longer now, actually. Yeah. Maybe 13 years.
When do you consider our friendship starting? That's the question.
I consider it starting...
I think halfway through shooting, maybe. Superbad.
That's when you consider the start?
No, that's when I felt like, oh, you really love me.
Well, I felt earlier.
You did?
Yeah. I felt during the... We should start by saying we were in a movie called Superbad together.
Let's give a lot of context, yeah.
Yeah, we'll go back. We are...
Anybody who chooses, like, goes out of the way to listen to this, I think, doesn't need too much
background. How do these two chaps know one another?
I mean, like, who's just randomly listening to this?
What a weird combination of people to throw together for a podcast. But we were told when we both got the part that Judd Apatow made us hang out. Like, his only directive was really to hang out.
Become friends.
We obviously had this, like, this movie that, like, stuck around for a long time. But we also went through something very similar at the same time together.
Yeah.
Very unique. Like, a super unique experience at the same time together.
Being what?
Just, like, being in a movie, like, one day, like... I mean, people from knew one day to the next, from Arrested Development, but it was still very, like... Yeah, we'd go to Cantor's and it'd be like some nerd like us being like, hey, you're awesome on Arrested Development. Yeah. You'd be like, thanks. And it was chill.
That's true, yeah.
And then we were in this movie, and then the day after it came out...
It was very different.
Very different. Mm-hmm. And what was awesome, though, was that right as it came out here and things were very, like, gnarly in that way, they sent us to other countries together, you, me, and Chris.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember. Like, the tour of that is what you and I always end up talking
about.
That
was amazing. They didn't like us in Italy.
No.
They didn't like the movie.
And Spain.
Spain, they didn't like us?
Well, it was, I don't know if it was that they didn't like us, but remember the poster.
The way they marketed it.
It was the funniest thing of all time.
Yeah. They made it look like it was a porno. There's like bras hanging off of the
life. Well, it's called Super Salitas, which is super horny.
Yeah, that's always really weird. It's called Super Horny, and if you look at our faces on the poster and you put the title,
do you remember
super
what the poster
horny,
was?
Yeah, it's just this story's crazy.
Okay, so they so Emma Stone's character in Spain, they were like really trying to make comedy, American comedies. Like, we were like, okay, we can break an American comedy in Spain, which I guess doesn't happen or didn't happen at that time.
Yeah.
So they hired a very famous actress to be Emma's voice.
Yeah, she's doing the voice dubbing.
Voice dubbing for Emma Stone's character in Superbad. And then the poster was her, not Emma, was the famous actress in Spain.
It's photoshopped in.
Photoshopped in, not Emma Stone, even though she was just a voice. And then between her legs were me, Michael, and Chris, like looking out.
Like drooling.
Like drooling.
So and it's called Super Horny.
It was called Super Horny. We were driving around Spain like, what the fuck?
What's happening to us?
This is so weird and not...
And in Italy, in the scene where we're like cuddling in the sleeping bags, they started like hissing.
Yeah.
They were like, ugh.
And
no.
Also, it was amazing because we first got to hear our voices.
Yeah.
Like the dubbed
over. That's fantastic.
Like,
yes. Well, I still keep in touch with my the guy who dubbed me, David. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
He was 4 feet tall. He had long red hair down to his ass. And he rode around Rome on a moped. And he was like, I have never met one of my actors. I've been doing Elijah Wood since Radio Flyer. And then remember with the moped? He was right. Like, we saw all these people cruising through traffic on the mopeds, and he was one of these guys. And I was like, aren't you scared to get hit by a car? And he was like, I'm very afraid for my life. David.
That's so fucked up, man.
But talking about like things changing in a weird way overnight, I remember something that happened right when Superbad came out was a few months before it came out. A friend of mine, this girl, Nicole, had a birthday party where I grew up, you know, in like some
in
like
Brampton?
Gymnasium in Brampton. She like rented it out and a bunch of friends got in there and hung out for the night.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of a cool birthday party.
Yeah, it was nice. It was like all my high school friends. We had just graduated and everything. But so there was this girl, Melinda, that I used to know. I was, I guess, hanging out with her, talking with her over the course of the evening. And then like a little later in the night, this guy comes up to me and he's like trying to kick my ass, like in a blind rage. And he's drunk. And my friends are holding him back. He's like, I'm going to kill that guy. I'm going to kill him.
No, like, I've never seen this guy. Cause for it? Just wants to fight?
I didn't even know this person existed before. And then he's like, really about to. And I was just kind of standing there laughing because I thought he had me mistaken. Like, I was like, this is so unfounded.
You clearly think I'm someone else.
Yeah, but I was like, what is happening? And I guess he had seen me talking to her and he was like dating her. Mm. And it made him crazy because he was a psychotic person. Like, I don't know.
Right.
He like got very drunk and then decided he had to murder me or something. And then everybody kind of calmed him down. So then, when Superbad came out, like a month or so later, I was out with my... This is the only interaction I've ever had with this man.
So interaction one is he tries to kill you.
Yes, and then he kind of... And he's like, you know, like frothing at the mouth. So then I'm at a bar, which was already kind of a misguided choice. Like, yeah. I realized kind of after, like, it was way too much heat on us at the time to just go out to a bar. Like, it was insane in there. I mean, I was not used to being this recognizable that quickly. And, like, everybody in the bar was, you know,
and also everyone's really inebriated.
Yes, everybody, like, there's no boundaries. Everybody's really physical with you and everything. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was just, I just was learning that this is, like, not the best. It was, like, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, not the best forum for
no.
you to walk
I mean,
around.
But I was just out with my friends, you know. And then this guy sits down next to me. His name was Matt something. And he was like, hey, Mike. How are you, man? And I was like, oh, hey, man. I'm like, whoa.
And you recognize him as the guy.
Yeah, I'll never forget his face. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, I'm kind of like, you know, treating him like you talk to like a pit bull or something. Like, you know, it's being nice now. I'm just petting him.
Right.
And he's like, how are you, man? He seems like the sweetest guy. I was like, I'm good. How are you? He's like, I'm good. He goes, I had no idea you were an actor. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, so you like go out to LA and stuff? You like work out there occasionally? And I was like, yeah, I mean, yeah. So he goes, God, I'd love to visit you out there sometime. I swear to God. And I was just like, what is this conversation?
He wanted to stay with you?
Yeah, he's like, man, like, let's keep in touch. Don't be a stranger.
So what did that tell you about your
I don't
newfound
know.
Circumstance?
It told me a lot about this person. I mean, it's just, like, very psychotic person. I don't know.
Right, like, very
this
unhinged.
Is his perception of the experiences in the world.
Right.
The way things are...
Well, did you find that, like, that kind of thing happened a lot? Or
that was
you...
funny. No, I mean, that was unusual.
It was an extreme circumstance.
That was extremely funny that things could turn that, like, that much of a 180.
So how long did he stay with you?
I mean, you know, we he's now my personal assistant. We've been together 12 years. He's outside the room.
I did see him out there.
And he's always in a state of either kicking my ass or loving me. We just live on that. We walk that
That was the guy beating
line.
The shit out of you outside? Oh, so that's Matt.
Yeah, well, you know, he was annoyed about the coffee. That...
I deserved it. Honestly, I deserved it.
I got him the wrong kind of coffee this morning.
Do you remember one of my favorite bits somehow is when we were on that tour and we were in Spain. I only remember just because I still, when I get on it, I was on an airplane yesterday and I still think about it all the time.
Yeah.
So we're on a plane in Spain and the plane smells... Yeah. Like feces?
Yeah. There's no other way to say it, really.
There's no it's like the most terrible smell you've ever...
It had that real kind of human feces smell to it.
This was not a bad odor that reminded us of feces. This was...
It was unacceptable. It was not something you want to hang out with for 3 hours in the air.
And we were grounded. Like, we couldn't take off. That's why it was, like, crazy. So we were, like, not even in the air, and we were stuck for, like, 3 hours on the tarmac, and it smelled... like feces, and we kept the bit was basically about how the pilot was making an announcement, but it was a Spanish pilot, and that he was excusing that we were on a new kind of plane that was actually assembled and built from
made entirely of shit.
Of shit.
But I think it was like exciting. It was like a thing that they were proud of. Like everybody from the town had contributed. People were
and
very proud to have contributed.
The wings. Everything in the wings.
I think that was probably a survival mechanism.
I had contributed. The townspeople had contributed as well.
We did the whole flight.
Yeah.
But it was probably just to distract ourselves from how awful
it was. It was truly fucking insane.
We needed some way to deal with it.
And... for 12 years, pretty consistently, I'd say at least twice a month, we do that bit.
Yeah.
Where the plane is, the pilot is giving an announcement of pride that the plane that we are on is made of feces.
There were a bunch of those. Like, twice we snapped at each other, I remember.
What was it?
Because it was very unusual. Oh, just we were just tired and impetient.
But what do you remember what the impetus
was? Yeah, I do.
Was?
Yeah, I do. I do. We were at a photo shoot, the three of us, at some putting place that glowed in the dark. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And the photographer
this
wanted
was in
me to do
this
something.
Was by the airport. This was...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. By LAX.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the photographer kept telling me to do something, to jump or something, and I didn't want to do it. And you were like, just do it so we can get out of here. And I was like, fuck off. Don't tell me to do it. I remember, and it was a tense moment, and I felt really weird telling you. I was like, why am I saying this to Jonah? But I think we were just tired, you know, it's like...
Like they literally had basically, like, threw pies in our face.
Yeah.
It was as close to slipping on a banana peel, and I was just like, I want to go home, fucking jump up in the air.
I mean, I think probably since then, have you developed, like, now I know how to kind of...
Yeah,
I don't
politely
know, advocate for myself. Yeah, in these situations,
you, I will say, were always. I tell you this all the time, and when I interview you for that zine that we did for A24, my interview with you and my sister are my two favorites. But you, even at 19, had like a very good boundary self protection of like what felt right for you and what didn't. And I really didn't have any self protection of like what felt goofy or what felt like I was betraying myself in some way. And I think you have really good boundaries even when you were a kid.
Yeah.
You kind of knew what felt shitty and what felt good and were able to stand up for yourself in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think maybe what I've learned since then is how to, you know, like stand up for yourself but not have it be tense.
Right.
Because I used to really feel like at war or something if I had a boundary and I needed to protect it. Like you feel like just put pressure on you. Like the silence, you know, like when there's like press people there and they're like, we want you to do this thing. You're like, I don't really want to do it. They just go quiet and like you've said something really awful.
Right.
Like, just say to me, I don't want to do it.
I this feels like weird. I don't want to do it.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know that moment?
Yeah.
That puts an enormous amount of pressure on you. I used to have a publicist, and sometimes I feel like when there's not too much to do, because I don't need like to get a lot of clothes for me or something, or my hair and makeup, my publicist, I feel like she would start fights with people just to kind of feel like she was, you know.
Had a job that was important.
Yeah, just to throw her weight around or just to be there. So I would sometimes be in a fight with a photographer without even knowing it. And the photographer would be like angry at me. And this happened one time with this photographer and she wanted me to wear a hat I didn't want to wear. And then she pulled me aside. She was like, what's your fucking problem? Why don't you want to do any of this shit? And I was like, what do you mean? I don't even know what we're talking about here.
Someone you don't know is upset with you going, what's your fucking problem?
Yeah.
And you're 19.
Yeah. That kind of alerted me to this that I was like, oh man. I got to just speak for myself here.
I want to talk about the play you're doing now.
Yeah.
Which I have not seen, which I feel like a horrible friend.
Oh, no, there's lots of time.
But I see all of your plays,
obviously.
You'll see.
I mean, we're going until February. So,
yeah.
You know,
I'm waiting for you to get in the rhythm a little
bit. Yeah, like
I know it takes you usually 6-8 months to get in the rhythm of things.
Come as late as possible.
No, but like even now, it's been amazing to watch you kind of like understand, you know, you have this beautiful thing going, especially with Kenneth Lonergan. And you've become this really formidable Broadway actor.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, it's kind of just weird how it happened, I guess. I mean, it just happened.
Not just a Broadway actor, but I mean,
yeah,
like,
just, yeah.
You have this, like, very formidable theater career, and especially a partnership with Kenneth.
Yeah, I still feel quite out of place, though, doing it. I feel like, you know, it's funny, Lucas.
Why is that?
I don't know, because I don't have any, like, language for theater. Like, Lucas and David Cromer, who plays the stepfather in the play, and he's actually a theater director. He directed The Band's Visit.
Tell him the name of the play.
Oh, The Waverly Gallery.
The Waverly Gallery.
Starring Elaine May, which is kind of the whole
thing. And Lucas Hedges and Michael
And Lucas, Sarah. And Joan Allen and me and David.
Oh, and Joan Allen.
Yeah.
But we're going to get into a whole Elaine May, like...
Yeah, that's a whole
Because I haven't even gotten to catch up with you because this is actually a forced time for us to hang out because you're in...
Yeah.
The play. It's so hard to,
doing it after this.
Yeah, you literally have a hard out to go do it.
Yeah.
And so I want to hear all about Elaine May,
but David,
go on,
David and Lucas and I share a floor in the theater, and David and Lucas have a shared language about theater. Like they make inside jokes about theater people and stuff and like the world, and like they sing songs from musicals and everything. There's this whole thing, and I'm like, this is not my world at all.
Right.
So I feel a bit like an intruder in there. Just, you know, and like you just feel that the audiences are the same people as these guys. Like they have this deep, like that's their obsession, their world. They know the whole language of it. Everybody, every show, every song.
Someone used a term last night that I loved, which was someone was talking to me about this kind of thing where they go, the audience is narrow, but it's deep as hell. You know, so it's like a narrow, it's like a certain type of person. So it's like narrow, but it's so deep, meaning like there's are people that are obsessed with
Yes.
theater like you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. Apparently, David said there's a message board called All That Chat. That
I'm going on. I'm literally getting a fake troll account and going so deep to talk shit about you on this.
Please, just like destroy my reputation.
I met Michael Cera outside the theater and I feel...
He spit in my face. I don't know, maybe where he comes from, that's a sign of respect.
But what's the chat room?
And there's people that like live in Florida or live in Seattle
that
are obsessed with Broadway and that they have a comment and an opinion on every show.
My sister's like, I mean, that's
really?
Beanie. Yeah, Beanie like grew up obsessed.
That was her thing?
Beanie, Ben Platt, they're like, they grew up together, they're best friends. Like, that is their like hip hop for me or something. Or movies for us, you know? Like, it, it's amazing. And Scott Rudin's like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Scott Rudin, who produced mid-90s and Waverly Gallery, Michael's play.
He's like the king of Broadway.
He's the king of Broadway. He's kind of the king of everything, but he, when you really see him light up is when he talks about a play, you know?
Yeah, I wish I could hold my own with those guys, but I just, that's just not my world. I'm kind of a visitor in it.
But maybe that gives you some unique perspective to working in the medium, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the only plays I've worked on are Kenneth Lonergan plays. And I was talking about this with my girlfriend the other day, that actually his plays, the thing that really gives it its force is its realism, the tone and the way that he captures language and conversation.
Yeah, there's nothing, quote unquote, Broadway about it.
Yeah,
actually.
I mean, it's hard to do an interpretation of one of his plays in a very avant-garde way or something, because like the thing that makes them really sing is that they sound like
people talking. You know what's funny? Because I saw you for the first time when your first time on Broadway was This Is Our Youth.
Right.
And you were amazing. You're the Kieran Culkin and Tavi Gevinson, is that how you say your last name? And I was obviously so like proud, but I think I was like so shocked that you were like, I think I was just so excited and shocked. I was like just like high off of seeing you up there.
Yeah.
And then by the time I saw Lobby Hero, which was your second play, I was like, holy shit, Michael is like a serious actor in this realm. You know what I mean?
Like, I would love to see you do it. I would love to see you on stage.
I'm so curious if I'd have the patience for it. I think I'd be better at writing a play than acting in one.
Totally. It's like it's a bit of a marathon.
Yeah, just because I get so sick of it. I can't.
You did write a play. I loved the play that you guys did.
Oh yeah, Spike Jonze and I wrote a play.
Great.
Yeah, I think I liked writing a play more than watching the actors get ready for it. Spike Jonze and I wrote a play called 100% Cotton.
That was really cool.
Thank you, we did one night only and then destroyed.
Can I describe my experience of when it first started?
Yeah.
I'm sure this is how you guys designed it, but it blew me away.
Yeah.
So you're kind of let in through this door on the street. You don't really know quite where you are.
You have no idea. It's like an alley.
Yeah, you're in an alley. And then you're brought up onto these like bleachers, and there's only a few rows. There's like how many people? 100 people maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then there's a big curtain. And then when the curtain opens, you realize you're in the Metropolitan Opera. And what's behind the curtain is the house, like the auditorium.
So you get a view
which
that
is
only
enormous.
The performers would see.
Yes, you're viewing from the stage of the house, and you guys used that whole space for the show.
Yeah.
With people wearing head mics, like way the hell up
and
far away. That was great. It was like stunning when that opened up, and you're like, this is where we are?
See, I was so used to it. Like, I didn't have,
oh, that
I knew
was a
that
great
was the
reveal.
Idea of it. I wish I could get
it was
that
very cool. It was very cool.
It was fun. It was so great that you were there. Yeah.
That was a great show. Was it fun to write that?
Yeah, like to me, I think writing gives me the most joy out of everything.
Yeah.
You know, I like love writing.
It's
I
a good
love
show.
Just watching great actors like say the words that you wrote. Like I would love to like write a play that like you were in.
That'd be fun.
Even though you're used to Kenny Lonergan, which would be taking a major step down for your next one. But when I saw you in Lobby Hero, I was like, holy shit, Michael really smashed it. Like I couldn't believe how much you carried a play with just you and Brian really talking to each other. Brian Tyree Henry, he's another brilliant
Amazing.
Actor.
Yeah, it's a great show.
And you didn't have a flashy part.
Right.
You know, and I was like, the fact that we're just watching Michael and another actor on a stage riveting you for 2 hours or however long it is, I was like, Michael has just become like a fucking beast of an actor.
That's great, man.
I already knew you were a beast of an actor, but I think it's different. You know, it's different than watching you
it's
in a
different
film.
Different experience,
Well, it's just different than watching you in a film than watching you
were
literally
you
just
nervous?
Have dialogue, basically.
Yeah. Did you, like, as a friend, watching your friend in a play, where did you feel nervous?
No, I was just excited. I knew you're someone who, like, doesn't miss, in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of, I don't know, you just have never missed. I've never seen you in something and been like,
oh, that's
man,
nice.
Michael wasn't good in that. I've never seen you miss. You're that's my favorite
really
actor.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's really sweet. Well, the it's thing the actually, like, something I think you would like about theater, you do the show so many times. You do it over and over. And there are shows that you feel terrible about. You just feel like it didn't, they're not clicking into you. You have, like, your own personal system of grading each show. You can't help but compare and contrast them based on the audience response and what they're feeding you and how you feel you're doing or how comfortable you feel or how authentic you feel or something. It's kind of a good, like, Buddhist exercise.
Of, like, letting go.
Yeah, let it go like a sandcastle that just gets washed away after each one. And there's no record of it. It's just like, okay, that 700 people think that I'm talentless.
The next, am I going to focus on that, or do I have to be in today?
Yeah, it's just they bring in groups of people, and they each of them see whatever you can do that day.
I would like that.
And that's their opinion of you. It's interesting, yeah.
I would like that because what I need in life the most is the experience is the experience. Being in the results business is like a failure.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I think that's a good thing about theater. I mean, sometimes afterwards you're like, huh, nobody will ever know I did that. There's no record of that work, really. Although there is, but
right, in movies it's even harder because there's like such a public record of you fucking up. Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's true. I love that about it. I've never heard it put like that, in that you have to kind of let it go immediately and go on to the next one.
I had the same kind of experience in the writer's room when I was in there for Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Same kind of like I don't know, Zen acceptance thing. Like,
of like, you know, whatever you write that day.
Yeah, some days you really contribute. Some days you like really pull your weight and you say something funny and, you know, it gets in the script. And some days you really just sit there and nothing comes to you.
Yeah.
But you just
can't. But what is it? Like, I guess this is such a Buddhist life thing, right? So it's like on those days, I so know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like any day you're writing or and doing anything, you're like,
there's good days and bad days.
Good days and bad days. So you go home and you're like, wow, I fucking like
had a breakthrough.
Had some real great shit today.
Right.
Or a day where literally just zero.
A waste of a day, yeah.
Is the idea that you go home and kind of like feel pride in that day or shame in that day? Or is that you just go, it was what it was, don't let either one. It just was that you were doing it is the idea.
Yeah, I think that. And maybe just to like get over your self-evaluation. Actually, the thing that I really appreciate about doing the theater, actually the point I was making was you'll have a show that you feel really terrible about.
Yeah.
That just happens. And sometimes your friends are there in those days, you know, and your friend will come back and tell you they loved it. And you'll say, well, no, I had a really bad show tonight. And they'll be like, well, you could never tell. Like, however you're perceiving what's happening, it has actually nothing to do with what the audience is experiencing.
See, as a human being, whatever I'm feeling, I assume everyone can just know that. Maybe I'm getting better at it now because I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
But if I felt like depressed or horrible, I assumed anyone I encounter, like I'm like a clear window and they can just see it. But you realize, no, they don't. They reflect whatever they want to onto you.
Exactly. I wonder if that, I don't know. I feel like part of kind of really getting to know yourself and know how you feel about things and not base that on what other people think is part of growing up.
Yeah, like knowing your actions and your
And where you stand on that, your own having your own compass in life.
It is. It makes your friendships deeper. It makes your relationships deeper when you have that.
Yeah, there's this line. Did you ever watch What Planet Are You From? The Gary Shandling
movie. Yeah,
yeah. Which I think, like, I know Gary really hated that movie.
That was my favorite part in the Gary doc that Judd did.
I'm talking about that movie.
Yeah, just because you're like, wow, Gary Shandling and Mike Nichols, like two of my heroes, got
John
together.
John Goodman.
Yeah, but think about just the minds of Gary
And
Mike Nichols.
Nichols
getting together, and
it's
you're
so
like,
perfect.
It was such a disaster. They hated each other.
It's really sad.
But do you think Gary was like, and we can go on a whole like Gary podcast, basically,
because
you were ended up were closer to him than I was, but I had a lot of good experiences
I know.
With Gary.
I remember the night that you guys met.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Where
night.
Was it?
We had Seth was doing some charity thing.
Oh right.
Yeah, it was like an evening. Celebrating Seth Rogen or something. That was kind of like the
joke
pretense of it, right? And Gary was there, and you were just talking to him. You just sat and talked with him at a table at the end of the night. And I was there with Nick Jasenovic and all our friends, and we were like getting ready to go. And Gary was just like clicked into you and talking to you, and you were like glowing because it was like, I think, a big moment for you. And we were like, hey, man, we're like getting ready to go.
Oh, he gave me a ride home.
Yeah, he was like, well, we're just talking. Do you guys mind if we just talk for a little longer? And you were just like, I was really happy for you because you just seemed like you'd been like anointed.
Meeting
really
him,
nice.
As you know, you and him got close. Like,
it was the best thing ever, yeah.
I mean, he's just as magical as anyone would ever.
Yeah, like, that was a big gift.
And a big loss.
Yeah, I really miss him a lot.
What a monumental brain
he's a great
and figure.
Person. Oh, but the line that in that movie, because he wrote that movie.
Sorry,
and this is, I think this is basically Gary's philosophy, is it's a line that Annette Bening says. She's like, what's your goal in life? And he's like, I don't know. And she goes, well, my goal is to get to know myself so that I can stop thinking about myself and start focusing on others.
Mm-hmm.
And it really feels like that's basically Gary's life philosophy.
Right. And if you look at like principles of like lots of different things that have helped a lot of people, whether they're religion or programs or things like that.
Right.
It's basically get out of self and give to other people.
Sounds nice.
Anytime you're in yourself, even beating yourself up is so selfish because it's about you.
Totally.
You know, even if you're being really unkind to yourself, it's a selfish act because it's just about you.
Yeah.
Before we move on, can I talk about Elaine May?
Oh, yeah.
Because I haven't even gotten to ask you as a friend yet
about
all
of
this shit.
No.
You've been so busy. But I want to know, what has that been like? Elaine May is the star of Michael's play, one of the stars of Michael's play, and she was Mike Nichols' comedy partner. Yeah.
And they did their show at the Golden Theater, which is where we're doing the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does she have crazy, I mean, obviously must say cool shit about that?
I mean, she's just like, it was just the two of us. We didn't even need all this space because there's like 12 dressing rooms. They're like, we're just on this first floor.
So what has been some of the most interesting topics that you've gotten into with her?
You know, the sad thing is
things you've learned.
Well, since we've, gotten out of rehearsals and we're just performing the show, I kind of hardly see her. We have to like construct situations where we overlap.
Right, because now you just go
just
and
get
do
to
the
theater.
Show.
Yeah, and I see her on stage.
Right.
So sometimes we'll hang back after the show and like she likes stout, so I bring her stout.
The beer?
She loves it. There's this really good stout called Mexican Cake, which is like it's got chocolate and cinnamon and like habanero pepper in it. It's like really thick. It's like tar.
Amazing.
And so
bring her a keg of that.
I bring her a keg of that. I get her real loose. and then you get her drunk, and then she'll tell you everything.
So you literally just kick back and have a beer with Elaine May sometimes after
sometimes,
the show.
Sometimes, yeah.
Like, you'll never forget that the rest. I mean, that
no,
is.
No, those are the best. Yeah, those are the best.
She's one of my top, she's my top five heroes
share.
Of all time is Elaine May.
Yeah.
You know, she's.
Oh, yeah, she's the great. Well, you have to overlap with her.
She's also one of the first huge female directors, like at a very early time.
Yeah.
You know?
I know, that's the most incredible thing.
Really pioneer, like, female director.
And she
director.
Would stare down the studios, like, with Mikey and Nikki.
And A New Leaf was her first movie with Walter Matthau.
That's great.
And it has one of my favorite sequences of all time in it. The movie's about Walter Matthau as a rich guy who loses all of his money and then dates Elaine May, who's, like, a wacky weirdo and has an inheritance, like a wealthy New York person, but she's, like, really wacky and, like, you wouldn't want to date her is the idea, right? But Walter Matthau loses all of his money, and he's such a shallow guy. He's obsessed with being rich. And there's a sequence. It's one of the funniest sequences in a movie ever.
Oh, when he's talking to his accountant?
No, where he says goodbye to being rich.
Oh,
and he sadly does all the things he does as a rich person for the last time. So he's kind of like almost crying and saying goodbye to like eating at this fancy restaurant, like getting tailored for his suit. But he's like very upset.
It's great.
In a way that only Walter Matthau could pull off so brilliantly.
Oh, man, yeah. They're really great together.
I want to hear an Elaine May story before we go. Imagine like getting to spend an afternoon with Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I think if I could, you know, those things like who would you have dinner with? Like,
I think they were friends till the end. She talks about him with great affection.
I think that would be my like, you know, people are like Jesus or whatever. Yeah. I think I literally would have dinner with Elaine May and Mike Nichols.
Did you ever see, there's a video on YouTube of the two of them talking like at the Y or something. The 92nd Street Y. It's great. It's kind of like what you're saying. Like, you just get to see them just hang out and talk.
And they just riff off each other.
Yeah, like, they talk about their careers and they talk about, you know, everything. It's really nice.
Reds is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
And Elaine May wrote, like, so much of Reds. Like, she came in to write, like, so much is the story of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never seen it.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah, I gotta
see
it.
Maybe it's a masterpiece.
Jack Nicholson's in it, right?
Jack Nicholson and Warren Beatty directed it and stars
won,
in it.
Won like an Academy Award for it.
He
right?
won like all of them, I think.
Right.
I think
yeah.
it was like the one where he won like.
He swept.
Like every category.
I think that movie is the reason Ishtar exists because he was indebted to Elaine.
Right. So he was like, he owed her.
Yeah, he wanted to get this movie made. And
I want to watch Ishtar now with where I'm at cinematically in my mind to see if it is bad or deserves the hatred or
I don't think it's like nearly as bad as the
like, vitriol for it
being like synonymous. I think the thing that happened is that it just lost like an incredible
right it was expensive and didn't make money.
I mean, it ended her film career.
That's so crazy
for
but
now.
She wrote The Birdcage
she
to
went
me
on
is
writing
the
yeah.
single funniest Oh, yeah. It's like maybe my favorite comedy. There's so much I think about on a daily basis from that movie. Like, even like Gene Hackman, when he's so taken with Nathan Lane as the mom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
He's like, you were just such a charming woman. And then obviously there's like Hank Azaria.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, he kind of steals.
I mean, it's like as good as it gets, pretty much.
And didn't you have that, like, Robin Williams was being basically held back all through? You have to tell.
Yeah, that's
I love
bit.
That take on
my
it.
My bit about the Birdcage is that Robin Williams, it's maybe my favorite performance of his.
Very subdued.
It's so subdued. He's the straight man of the movie. Yes, and Nathan Lane is the comedic figure, basically, of the film.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there are fucking ankle weights on Robin Williams the entire movie. And then there's that one moment where he's directing the play, and he's showing, like,
Martha Graham.
Bob Fosse. Clearly, like, Mike Nichols is just, like, thumb on him, like holding him down the entire movie.
He's like, just let him go.
And Mike Nichols is just like, I'm too exhausted. Fuck it. And just Robin Williams just does Robin Williams for 5 minutes
for that
the
one
rest
scene
of the time.
In the movie. Yeah.
He's fully in character as, like, the straight man of the movie, but, like, he cannot help himself.
It's really great.
But it's just funny because you see him, like, it's almost like he's miserable containing that the entire movie, and he just fucking can't help himself.
But he's really great, too, as that.
He's so heartbreaking.
I just got reminded of my favorite story of yours.
What?
It's being the story where a bird almost flew into you.
Oh, my God, yeah.
This is the story of yours that I tell people the most because it's my favorite thing.
I'm literally just telling about scenes from The Birdcage, so you can go ahead and tell this
Do you want me to tell it?
Yeah, you tell it.
Me tell it?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it's your story.
I know, but maybe it'd be more interesting to hear you tell
it. Okay, I'll tell you. You'll see my interpretation of it down over the years because you told me this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So
this was longer than that.
Correct me if I get it wrong. So you're dating this girl.
Yeah, my first, like, serious girlfriend.
Yes,
Sydney.
And you went to meet her family at their house.
Nope, already wrong.
Okay.
Her brother's high school graduation.
Oh, so it was a big event like that. Oh, okay.
At the beach. Her brother and her dad and his friends are all...
playing football or something.
Bro, like, jocks.
Right, and they're all, like, getting down squirming in the sand together.
Yeah.
Like, muscles rippling.
Yeah.
Right. Like, writhing on each other.
Yeah.
Doing some masculine stuff.
Yeah.
And you're sitting with the women... talking, right?
Kibitzing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they were like, come play. Weren't they like, hey, come play in the game? And you're like, no.
No, they took a break because the men were all around.
Right.
So the men all came back to
me. So they're hanging out near you. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and everyone's kind of hanging out, and we're sitting in these chairs, like, eating lunch.
But you're already feeling not like the most masculine person on the beach because you didn't play the game.
100% didn't. Right. It was like full, like, Wedding Crashers style. Like, they were playing football, and I didn't want to partake.
Right. And you guys were, like, folding napkins about, like, at the table.
Feelings. Yeah.
Right.
And they sit back down, and everyone, like, the men are, like, exhausted from the big football match.
Right. Chugging Gatorade.
Yeah, and just sort of, like, patting each other on the back and blah, blah, blah.
Tussling
and then you
hair.
Could take it from here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the thing that happened that really makes it a great story is that, so there was a bird that nearly flew by you, right? Like, flew by your head? What's the non-exaggerated version
of it? The real version is a bird flew at me. But didn't, like, come that close to hitting.
There was no immediate danger.
It was, like, you looked up and a bird was flying at you, but it wasn't severe and it wasn't dangerous.
Yeah. And so, and this might peak the mic a little. So your reaction was, get ready on the dial there. So your reaction was you jumped in your chair and went, please! That's it, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes it my favorite story ever.
Why, please!
And then for the rest of the day, you were like the please guy, right?
Yeah, they were.
Please.
They were so unkind.
Please.
They'd, like, throw a football towards me and be like, please.
Please.
Yeah. Needless to say, she dumped me very shortly
she
after
did?
That. Yeah.
Oh, well, it shows where she's at.
She's married now.
Yeah.
And to probably a guy who's not scared of birds, I imagine.
Good for her.
But I am terrified of, like, winged animals.
Birds.
Yeah, like, but like...
isn't that just birds?
Like pigeons. Like, if a pigeon
a
would
bird.
Like to touch my face...
What about, like, a bug that flies?
I can handle that.
Like, you know my dad, Luigi.
Of course.
My dad is not afraid of, like, anything except for he has a deadly fear of June bugs.
He those are, like, the big fat
girl.
Ones?
Yeah. If those fly by, he, like, really shrinks.
The idea of Luigi...
yeah.
Running scared
turn
of
into
a June
jelly.
Bug.
Yeah.
What is it? Is there been?
I don't know. I never
story?
Got the deep psychology.
Tell the story where your dad got mad about cleaning stuff up.
Oh yeah,
this is my favorite story about
it
your dad.
It was like when we were really little. Me and my sisters. I don't know. It was the thing where like your dad tries to get angry and then ends up accidentally being funny and that makes him even more angry. So he was like angry that we left stuff around and he accidentally rhymed like a Dr. Seuss rhyme. He was like, "You kids leave your things where they lay. You put them there and there they stay."
But he screamed it.
Yeah, he was screaming it. And we all like just burst out laughing. And my mom laughed, which also like took
set
the steam
him off.
Out. Yeah,
like, yeah.
And then he was just,
"You leave them there and there they stay."
Yeah. Also, to form a sentence that way.
It's like there isn't anything funnier than anger because it so rarely lands. Like, when does anger like land the way you want it to land?
Yeah, that's true.
There's like a 3% chance silly. Anger lands in the affected intention of it.
If anger doesn't lead to violence, then it's just silly.
Right.
I mean,
like,
if violence gets okay, it's like, oh, okay, this is a situation.
But even
you're hitting me.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, anger of just like expressive,
silly, right in the face.
Nonviolent. Physical.
I guess you've seen a lot of that. On sets, because there's a lot of like people lose their temper on sets, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. My first movie was I Heart Huckabees. And David O. Russell was the director, and that was the movie
right.
he like all those
Say
videos
no
came out.
Yeah.
He since like, you know, apologized
Chilled
to
out.
Me
yeah.
or like kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was awesome. He's actually really, yeah. I like seeing him quite a bit now.
That was a phase.
But
or
I was
something.
Scared of him when I was younger. Because I was 18, all I ever wanted to be was a director. Mm-hmm. And it was my first set I was ever on. And I was like, this is what movies are like? Holy shit.
Right.
But I think people, and then growing up more, I kind of understand like the odd part about at least being an actor, I would say, is like having to express certain emotions no matter what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand it more like when I had an act, you know, if I had an actor as a director sort of lose it a little bit, I understand more because mm-hmm. they're all of a sudden having to give everything to this thing or get to this place.
Mm-hmm. I've done. I mean,
and you have no idea what's going on in their personal life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. You know,
it's
so
true.
It's like someone could have had like lost a relative, and then they have to like do this really funny scene or something.
Yeah, right. Right.
You know, not that it's an excuse to behave poorly at work at all.
No,
I just maybe.
Well, there's a level that where it crosses over, and you're just like, you're
yes.
just an asshole.
Yes.
I kind of get when people are upset about something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always just like, oh, it's like dad's angry or something when like everything goes quiet on set and somebody's like,
well, Scott Robertson
changing the vibe.
Scott Robertson is
oh,
like,
Scott, yeah.
Scotty was the first AD on Superbad and Moneyball, and he was the first AD executive producer on mid-90s.
Oh, that's great.
Scott, like, makes movies. He is, like...
The engine.
Good or bad, first AD can make or break a film.
Totally, yeah.
And when Scott would get upset, which is very rare, he's so the best, but he has to be kind of, like, the parent in a lot of ways, even more than the director.
Oh, yeah.
So if, like, people are just, like... goofing off too much or something.
Right.
The very it's like seeing your mom or dad lose their shit, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Even as a director, it was funny to still feel that way.
There's certain jobs
like,
where that's
whoa,
part
okay.
of it. Like, part of actually being good at your job is sometimes you have to, like, show people that you're annoyed.
They're kind of bad cop. Like,
yeah,
they kind of have to get people away. Because sets can so easily
you have to police the set
turn
sometimes.
To hanging out.
Yeah. It's a lot of people. It's 100 people. You have to tell them all to be quiet.
I'm always laugh at this point still when someone's cell phone goes off.
Yeah.
The idea that you would work on a set that, like, yourself, that the ringer would be on.
In a take,
it's...
I remember, you know when they do, like, room tone?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to go quiet. I remember you would always do the joke.
Such a ham.
Yeah.
Such a fucking ham. That's so embarrassing. I literally told that story the other day. Someone was doing room tone, and I was like, you know, when I was, like, 21, I was so obnoxious that, like, you have to be quiet to get the tone of the room. And
yeah, they just need it.
And they literally need it to make the film and post-production.
That's the best part. It's like, that's like the best time to try and make someone laugh.
Yeah, I would always try and make you laugh. Yeah.
That's because it's like the most thrilling thing when you're not allowed to make a sound.
Well, we're getting close to the end.
Okay. It's happened to me on stage, by the way, this kind of laughing.
Oh, my God.
With Kieran during This Is Our Youth.
What were you just, what do you think
Me and Kieran we both gamble a lot. Like, we gamble together. That's kind of, we're both degenerate gamblers. And the thing we had was, we didn't want to, like, just trade money the whole time, so we would gamble for push-ups.
That's
know?
So good.
Like,
so how
push-ups
many,
on demand.
How like, many would it be, like? It would
be, like, you owe me 100 push-ups in the next, they're good for the next week, and then they expire, but it's on demand. So, like, we'll go to dinner, the food will show up, and then I'll say I need 20 push-ups.
And what's the maximum you could ask for in one?
You can only dole out 20 at
20,
a time.
Okay.
With, like, some time in between or something.
Okay.
You know?
So, that's amazing. So you'd be, like, in a restaurant.
It's like humiliation. And then he's doing push-ups, and people are looking. So I think I said, like, if you could do this thing on stage, I'll owe you whatever, like a dare, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing was to do a really dumb delivery of a line, to go like, okay, that's it. There's a line in the play where he goes, okay, that's it. Call Christian, do this. And I said, if you do it like, that's it. like an old Jimmy Durante, like really lean into that. That was the dare. And then he did it like 100%.
Like he would always do
it? He just did it. And as soon as he did it, he held in that pose for a second, and we looked at each other's eyes, and then we had to both look away. And then the scene went on. He kept it, and then, but I knew as soon as we looked at each other,
you would start.
It was going to be bad. And then we did, and then we just broke.
You were literally laughing.
We just broke.
Play?
Yeah, we were laughing for like a minute.
What
and
do
I
you
fell
do?
Down on the bed laughing, dying, like
and so you just
uncontrollable
make that part
laughter.
Of the scene?
No, the audience knew that the play had broken, and they were laughing too. They were like enjoying it
because they knew you guys had broken.
It was like a moment. Yeah, I mean, it was like the whole. It was fun.
Do you get talked to by like someone?
No, nobody
after?
Did. But I mean, we felt the pressure of like we have to get this thing back on the track. This play, like you know. We can't, like, lose the stakes of all that we've built up to this point in the play. This is, like, near the end, and the payoff is coming, like, and these people paid. You really have this thing in your mind of, like, professionalism.
Right, because people literally spend their hard-earned money on expensive theater tickets.
I mean, sometimes, I think people like to see when something goes wrong in the theater. It makes it kind of a special thing.
Yeah.
But I did have a sense of responsibility that made it 10 times harder.
Oh, my God.
And so it was a crazy feeling.
I wish I could have seen that.
It was pretty special, yeah. But we got it back, you know, and got through the play.
Yeah, man, you and Kieran were so good together.
I love working with him.
He's a great actor, yeah. too. And he's an interesting guy. I don't know him very well. I only know him through you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Like, they just did a big article about him mm-hmm. in Vanity Fair, a big profile.
Yeah.
And it's funny to see your friend's life sort of, like, narrativized.
Right, like they sort of, like, tell a story,
they
kinda,
yeah,
their
they
version
do his
of a story.
His whole life, in a way.
Did he feel it was accurate, or did you feel it was
he
accurate?
He didn't read it, I think.
Yeah, good for him.
Or hasn't yet.
That's such self-discipline.
Yeah, I think I know why, because it must be weird to read about your life, especially he's got this kind of funny life,
mm-hmm.
hanging out with Michael Jackson.
If I were to interview Kieran and knew that,
like people go,
that would
you know,
be 100% of my
questions.
If you're
writing for Vanity Fair.
Like, what are you in? What are you interested in
yeah,
knowing about?
I guess it's a bit of a monkey on his back, no pun intended.
Who's the craziest person, like Michael Jackson type figure you've ever met?
I mean, Michael Jackson, that's a high bar of insanity.
I mean, him being the holy grail of like odd eccentric figures, important
yes.
figures that have eccentricity to them.
Maybe David Lynch, I got to hang out with him. I mean, I don't know him very well because I just spent like a day with him, but
right.
to me he seems like a person from another planet.
Yeah.
In the way that's like, you just can't understand how they exist and how they're so great.
And did you have conversations with him that like confirmed your love or admiration for him?
Just the fact that I met him like made me appreciate how open of a person he is.
Yeah.
The way that I met him was by going and doing transcendental meditation,
mm-hmm.
like signing up for it.
At the Lynch Foundation?
Yeah, or the TM Center.
Yeah.
There's a few of them. You go over the course of 4 days to learn the method.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the fourth day, there was this young girl, and she's like, I'm from the David Lynch Foundation. Do you guys want to meet David Lynch and meditate with him sometime? We were like, what? Like, we really just walked in there and did this for 4 days, and then she just appeared
Whoa.
With an invitation to go meet the master. And I was like, what is happening? This is crazy. And then we didn't really believe her until like a month later. She was like, how's Thursday at David's house? And he had us at his house at like noon, and he invited us up to like his painting studio. And I got there before all my friends, and I went up and met him just one-on-one for a
minute.
Was it
awkward?
He was like, hey, buddy. Hey, Mike. He knew who I was, I think. And he was like, wow, how are you?
Good was he wearing the black suit with the white?
I don't think so. I think he was wearing his like painting stuff.
Garb.
But he was so, I mean, that was like a miracle to me
yeah.
that I could be invited to this man's home and meet him and meditate with him.
Yeah, you just like hung out at like, David Lynch's house.
Yeah, we hung out for like, you know, an hour and
Amazing.
Then we all left.
I love that.
And then I got to work with him for like a day.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I mean, he's like someone that I think is a different kind of person.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. Do you have someone like that?
Mine would be, it wasn't a long, and it was just a great story for who the person was. I think I met Prince.
Oh, wow. That's pretty great.
We went to go see Prince.
Oh, yeah,
with
that's
the
right.
whole cast of High School Musical.
Yeah, right.
On our first stop in the Superbad Tour,
that's
another
right.
weird Superbad Tour thing.
Yeah.
The cast of High School Musical was on our floor.
They had a box.
We all went to go see Prince.
At
yeah, they
O2,
invited
right?
us
they had,
to
like,
see
a Disney
Prince.
Box.
It was yeah. amazing.
That was wild.
I met Prince very many, many years ago. And it was at his house, I guess. And
what?
It was a party. Like, you know, it was like a... It
Amazing.
Was, oh, I know what it was. It was when I presented the first time at the Academy Awards many, many years ago, Prince had like an after party. And I think he would have like an after party, like a famous after party after them
oh
for
God.
Many years.
Wow.
But I was 20. I was like 24 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I went and I met him. And what was awesome was... I met him and he was wearing a crazy Prince outfit, you know, like a cool Prince outfit. And we said a few words and he said, hello, like have fun, welcome to my house, whatever. I don't remember exactly what he said. And then he excused himself. And literally 20 seconds later, I turn around and he's having a conversation with someone else, but he's wearing a completely different outfit. And I'll just never forget that. He had somehow, like in the Dave Chappelle Show version of like Prince, yeah. You know, like he had literally did an outfit change in like what felt to me like must have been like at tops 45 seconds.
That's great.
And that's my one image of Prince where he,
I love that.
Something very eccentric happened.
Wow. Like a little magic trick.
Yeah. Like just some sort of like what you would want him to do.
But I love that what that actually, like the story that that actually tells, it's like magical. It's like you turn around and he's wearing different clothes. But the reality of it is, it means this guy runs into his room and frantically changes his clothes.
It just, I don't know how he must have had the clothes on underneath.
Yeah, he had a tearaway suit.
He had like a tearaway Prince suit. And like, does he find that funny that he would run into people he was speaking to 2 minutes earlier in a completely different outfit?
Just confused them.
Is that like comical? Is he just so swagged out that like he just got to have so much drip, like so many different outfits?
Yeah,
I love Prince though, so rest in peace, yeah. Prince.
Yeah, he was great.
Well, Mikey, I love you.
All right, buddy. We did it.
This was... a scheduled and forced way for us to hang out, yes, while you're doing a play.
I think we should schedule this more often.
Everybody go see the Waverly Gallery.
Waverly.
Wave,
just take that again. You want to take
that again. Run that back and erase it.
The Waverly Gallery.
What did I say?
I think you said the Waverly Garrity.
Go see Mike in the Wildly Wearded and...
No, the Brad Garrity.
The Brad... Go see Michael in the Brad Garrity. The Brad Garrity. Okay, go see Michael and...
as Brad Garrity. I worked with Brad Garrity. All right, let's stop.
What did you work with him on?
I want the last line to be, I worked with Brad. No,
just
kidding.
Abruptly cut off. What did you work with Brad Garrity
I worked with him
on?
Just like a year ago on a little movie called Gloria that Julianne Moore is Gloria.
Oh, no,
it's coming
way
out soon. It's a remake of this Chilean movie called Gloria that I
love. Right, and the same director remade,
yes,
the movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Sebastian
That's
Lelio.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was Brad Garrett?
He was great. I mean, we talked about poker the whole time because he lives in Las Vegas and plays poker.
He lives in Las Vegas?
Yes, he does. He like owns a comedy club out there or something.
Brad Garrett owns a comedy club in Las Vegas and lives out there. We need to go to Las Vegas and go to the Brad
Garrett. I think
that's
right. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay, great.
Great.
Mikey, I love you.
That's a plan.
You're the best.
Love you, buddy.
I love you more than you know.
You're the best. This is great.
Go see Michael Cera in the Waverly Gallery.
Thank you.
Co-starring with Elaine May.
Well, when does this come out, this podcast?
January. Will you still be in the play? Yes.
We're basically done by the time you're listening.
Go see the final show.
Go read about the Waverly Gallery.
Go read about the reviews of the Waverly Gallery.
Check them
starring
out.
Starring Brad Garrett and Mikey
and Elaine
Cera
May.
And Elaine
together
May.
Again.
And Garrett Joan and Allen May. And Lukey Hedges.
And David Cromer.
And David Cromer. And go rent iTunes style mid-90s.
Or buy it.
Or buy it.
Yeah. I mean, talking about rewatch value.
Talking about the rewatchability of a
get
film.
Get the special feature.
I've seen it like 3,000 times.
Is there a making of?
There's lots of
that's
good
what
behind
I
want to
see.
Footage. And there's
are
deleted
scenes.
Are you
going to cut
scenes.
A making of out of it?
Yeah.
I want to see that.
We had really good because all the kids were shooting the skateboarding.
Yeah, right. Oh, so you have all that.
Yeah, and a lot of it's on that footage.
Great,
so
great,
it's
great.
Really fun.
Oh, that sounds great.
And
I would buy
see
that.
Michael and I being friends, hanging mm-hmm. out.
In life.
In life.
Yeah, unless anything goes wrong.
Thanks for listening. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to our editor, Tom Wyatt, and Robot Repair, who composed our theme.